There's a saying that's familiar to everyone in Rwanda. It goes, God spends the day elsewhere, but he sleeps in Rwanda. The saying has a double meaning. It alludes to the country's physical beauty, but also to the brutality that has at times haunted Rwanda. The story of that country, from decolonization to the genocide to the present day, is told in a new memoir by Joseph Sebarenzi. Before he was sent into exile in 2000, Sebarenzi was the third most powerful man in the country. He was the Speaker of the Parliament. He now lives here in Washington, D.C., and Joseph Sebarenzi joins me in the studio. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You grew up in a village that was mixed. There were Hutus and Tutsis. You yourself are a Tutsi. At what point in your life did you realize that there were actually ethnic differences and that this was something that you needed to be aware of?
It was in 1973, shortly before the massacres, and there was an...
These were massacres that left about 30,000
yes.
Rwandans dead.
Yes, and I was in the kitchen at night ready to have our dinner, and then my mother was upset, and she pointed a finger to me and said, did you know that I had to go in the bush with you when you were a baby?
In the bush.
In the bush. She said, because if we had stayed in house, we would have been killed. I said, by who? And she said, Hutu. Why? She said, because we are Tutsi. I had no idea what Tutsi. I had no idea what Hutu meant.
And you even asked her, who's a Hutu?
I did ask, and she mentioned some names.
But people that you knew, neighbors.
Yeah, people I knew. And my sister said, but these are good friends. They can't harm us. And the next day, and I saw it. I saw people with machetes running, shouting, and burning houses. But we left shortly before they got to our house, and the house was not spared.
There are stories in this book about how your Hutu neighbors helped save you at times, and at other times took part in the attacks.
So it's a paradox that the same people who protect us in 1973 from those killers, eventually in 1994, from that family, people harmed my family.
They were involved in the genocide in 1994, 90 days mm-hmm. that left 800,000 people, mainly Tutsis, dead, including your mother, your father, seven of your siblings, many of your relatives. You were in Canada at the time watching this all yeah. on television. Why did you decide to return to Rwanda after what happened, after what happened to your family?
You know, it was a very difficult decision. I was in a very safe place, but I felt I had survived for a reason. I felt I had to go back to Rwanda, help in reconstruction, to make sure what had happened, it does not happen to Hutu and to Tutsi in future.
After the genocide, after you returned, you decided to enter politics, to get involved in government, and you had this astronomical rise. You became the Speaker of Rwanda's parliament at a very young age. What was it like to try and govern in a country so soon after one of history's greatest examples of genocide?
It was very difficult. It was so hard because people were still angry. There were revenge going on. There were human rights in many parts of the country. We were under basically a military regime. And as a Tutsi, as a survivor, as someone educated who had a chance to travel in many countries, I felt we had to do something. We had a president, but that president didn't have much power. Kagame was really the power behind the throne.
Paul Kagame. Who at the time was the vice president.
Was the vice president, but he was the most powerful person in the country.
He was the head of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, who had led an attack on the Hutu-dominated government that was carrying out this genocide. And we should mention Paul Kagame is currently the president of Rwanda.
Yes, he is.
You had a falling out with him. Eventually, Kagame accused you of being a threat to national security.
Mm-hmm.
You actually became afraid for your life. I mean, you didn't just resign as speaker. You had to leave the country.
A few days after I resigned, I learned from many sources that there was planned to kill me, and I decided to leave.
President Paul Kagame has been lauded by world leaders as an example, a model of a stable African leader. You are very, very critical of Paul Kagame in this book, almost accusing him of exercising dictatorial powers.
It's understated, actually. He's an autocrat. Just to give you some example, you never hear from Rwanda a political leader now who can stand and oppose any given policy. You don't have that. You don't have people go out and protest government policy. You are not allowed. So it's very tough.
But are government leaders in Rwanda dealing with issues of reconciliation that will prevent a future genocide from occurring?
No. If you look at Rwanda today, underneath, it's boiling. Because you cannot have reconciliation if you don't have justice on both sides. We need to come up with a formula that will make Hutu and Tutsi feel part of the system. That way, we can have a hope to have a lasting peace and reconciliation in Rwanda.
Joseph Seberenzi is the author of God Sleeps in Rwanda, which comes out this week. He joined us here in the studio. Mr. Seberenzi, thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure.
And you can read an excerpt from God Sleeps in Rwanda at thenewnpr.org.